Good evening. For WBAI News in New York, I'm Linda Perry. There was a major win in the Supreme Court today for labor unions. A 4-4 split rejected a conservative legal attack which sought to cripple the ability of unions to collect fees from non-union workers. The court, which is now evenly divided with 4 liberal and 4 conservative members, let stay a 1977 legal precedent. It allowed fees which add up to millions of dollars a year for unions. While Scalia was alive, it seemed virtually certain that the high court would rule 5-4 to overturn the system that's been in place nearly 40 years. The one-sentence opinion which was issued today did not identify how each justice voted. It simply upheld the decision from the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, but it was a blow to conservative groups that have spent years pushing the court to overrule the 1977 precedent, which allowed unions to collect fees from members and non-members alike.
Well, it means that at this point in time, these heavily entrenched conservative folks who are trying to destroy the middle class and what's left of the working class that can stand up to them, unions have been put on hold. But I am assuming that this is just a battle and the war is not over.
Michael Mulgrew is president of the United Federation of Teachers.
The union workers and the unions themselves have the ability to go out and really engage in political issues and social issues in ways that other folks sometimes can't do because of what life circumstances. And for us, it's just like, okay, fine. You know, you came at us. Things are shifting in this country. There's a lot of anger about, you know, it's pretty clear that there's a small group of people who've decided that the country is there for them and no one else, and we're all supposed to serve them and whatever they think is right, and we're not going to stand by and just let that happen. So what it says today is they lost this battle. Is the war over? Absolutely not. And we'll just go forward. But now at least people know what's really going on out here. And there are a group of people trying to do some really bad things.
Mainstream media is reporting that now the unions will be able to continue to collect fees from members and non-union members alike to cover the costs of collective bargaining. But the UFT president says unions do so much more for non-union members.
It's all sorts. It's our health and safety programs. It's all our training for them for their professional work. It's the ability to, you know, run our welfare funds for the prescription drugs. It's all sorts of services that we offer, you know, and support services for, you know, families in distress, all different things of that. That's all of the, you know, besides due process and representation, which people always consider, oh, that's all what unions do. We do so much more than that. And that our folks who are not union members get all of that, just like the folks who are union members.
In other news, Governor Andrew Cuomo says he and legislative leaders have reached a general agreement to include a minimum wage increase and a provision for paid family leave in the budget now under negotiation. On his proposal to gradually increase the minimum wage to $15 an hour, Cuomo says today the talks are now focused on how much, when, and where. He proposed phasing the increase in on different schedules in New York City and upstate, but compromises have been on the table, this because of concerns in the Republican-controlled Senate. The increase has had strong backing from organized labor and opposition from business, including farmers and small business. He says details of paid family leave are also still being worked out. The new state fiscal year begins on Friday. Former New York State Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver has lost his license to practice law for 4 months after he was convicted of fraud and extortion. Silver was disbarred today by the Appellate Division of the State Supreme Court in Manhattan. The 72-year-old Democrat was convicted on November 30th in a $5 million corruption case. Prosecutors said he traded favors to enrich himself. He is scheduled to be sentenced April 13th. Attorneys General from Massachusetts and the U.S. Virgin Islands have launched their own investigations into whether Exxon deceived the public about the effects of climate change. They appeared in New York today at a news conference announcing a new multi-state effort to combat global warming. New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman said the inquiries join ongoing probes by his state and California into the Dallas-based company. Schneiderman says nearly 24 state attorneys general have joined a coalition exploring considering how best to reduce climate change. Former Vice President Al Gore said the approach is reminiscent of early efforts to take on the tobacco industry. Exxon's Suzanne McCarron issued a statement which said that allegations the company deceived the public about climate change are politically motivated and baseless. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. The FBI backed down from its legal fight with Apple over cell phone encryption. The reason they gave is that they found a company which was able to unlock California's mass shooter's iPhone. The dispute ignited a fierce internet-era national debate. It pitted digital privacy rights against national security concerns, and it reinvigorated discussion over the impact of encryption on law enforcement's ability to serve the public. Evan Greer with Fight for the Future, a digital rights group that fights to keep the internet free and open, says the FBI's credibility hit a new low.
Every credible technical expert has been saying since this case began that there were other ways that they could explore to get into this phone, and that this was never about just getting into that phone or getting information off of it to help people, but it was always about creating a precedent that would allow the government to force private companies to weaken their security, which affects not only our civil liberties, but everyone's public safety.
The FBI had said they explored every option to get into the cell phone of the San Bernardino attacker. They went on record more than 19 times, claiming that they needed Apple to unlock the phone. Meanwhile, a security firm the DOJ has worked with before is the one that unlocked the phone, and they withdrew the case. Greer says her group ran a campaign called Save Security to bring forth attention that encryption protects our airports, our hospitals, our power plants, our security, that decreasing our security makes us more vulnerable to attacks.
So that's why we launched safesecurity.org, where we collected more than 20,000 comments from concerned internet users who are opposed to government backdoors and weakening encryption. And then we set up a little flat screen TV powered by a battery pack outside of the courthouse in Riverside, California, to display those comments and make sure that decision makers were hearing from people about what the real potential ramifications of what the FBI was asking Apple to do in this case. And I think that was part of the backlash that forced the FBI to realize that they were certainly losing in the court of public opinion and very well might lose in a court of law. And so they backed down and sort of are now trying to gracefully run away with their tail between their legs.
Mm-hmm, gotcha. Now, in New York, the Manhattan DA, Cy Vance, was saying that there are phones that he's got that are that he wants unlocked, and that's why he was testifying in favor of unlocking these phones. Do you think there's going to be a backlash among legal authorities trying to get the FBI to continue this tactic, or you think it's over?
I think that's absolutely already happening. The FBI or the DOJ said in a statement that they would continue assisting other law enforcement partners, which basically means they're saying they're going to share this method with other law enforcement to help them open other phones. Now, what's extremely dangerous about that is the more this vulnerability gets spread around, the more likely it will end up getting used not only by law enforcement, but by other actors who would like to break into people's phones and potentially use them to do harm or commit crimes. And that's been our concern the entire time. The best thing at this point would be for the FBI to disclose the vulnerability to Apple so that they can fix it for other phones in the future. That's the best thing for everyone's public safety and security. We're all better off with strongly encrypted phones, with strongly encrypted computers, and with basic security measures that keep all of us safe.
Evan Greer is with Fight for the Future. The withdrawal of the court process also takes away Apple's ability to legally request details on the method the FBI used in the case. Apple attorneys said they hoped the government would share that information with them if it proved successful, but the Justice Department wouldn't comment on any future disclosure of the method to Apple or to the public. A review to assess the success of a six-year cleanup of the Upper Hudson River has been started by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. General Electric last year finished dredging a 40-mile northern stretch of the river for PCBs under a Superfund project that cost an estimated $1.5 billion. The scheduled year-long review announced today by the EPA will include data collected this spring and summer from fish, water, and sediment. The second in a series of five-year reviews comes as advocates continue to call for dredge crews to return to the river for an expanded cleanup. But EPA officials have said early signs show the dredging was a success. Until 1977, GE plants discharged into the river more than 1 million pounds of polychlorinated biphenyls, which are considered a probable carcinogen. Former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg and other philanthropists are giving $125 million for a new cancer-fighting effort at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore. The school issued a statement today which said that Bloomberg and others are funding the creation of an institute that will focus on research in immunotherapy, which seeks to use patients' immune systems to destroy cancer cells. The NYPD has sworn in a new deputy commissioner of training. Tracy Casse was formerly a member of the Denver Police Department and is founder of the Center for Policing Equality. It's a think tank aimed at strengthening the relationships between community and police. She was also heavily involved in the National Initiative for Building Community Trust and Justice, which was the DOJ's pilot program aimed at reducing racial bias among police officers. Meanwhile, the NYPD is practicing how officials and officers would respond to a Brussels-style attack. An exercise took place yesterday in a conference room. It involved four locations around the city and included a suicide bomber, shooter, and other attacks. Officers discussed how they would deploy resources to best take down the suspects, stop the danger, and render aid. NYPD Chief of Department James O'Neill says it's one of several such exercises the department has undergone to ensure it's prepared. And finally, police have charged Donald Trump's campaign manager with battery. This after a videotaped altercation with a reporter. It's been transformed into another messy campaign sideshow. Police in Florida determined that there was probable cause to charge Corey Lewandowski, who served as Trump's most trusted political advisor for much of the past year. On Tuesday morning, they issued Lewandowski a notice to appear before a judge on May 4th for the misdemeanor charge, which carries up to a year in jail. They charged him after reviewing a surveillance video of the incident, which was obtained from security at the Trump-owned property. Police determined the video shows Lewandowski grabbing Michelle Fields, who worked for Breitbart News at the time, as she tried to ask Trump a question during a March 8th campaign event. Trump cast doubt on her claims, telling reporters that he doubts her claims that she suffered bruises from Lewandowski. Earlier Tuesday, Trump released a series of tweets reversing a previous position that the incident never happened, hinting instead that he feared for his safety. The New York businessman's rivals seized on the news, which comes a week before a Wisconsin primary contest that could give Trump an insurmountable delegate lead or give his opponents a new hope of a contested national convention. The incident fueled fresh attacks by anti-Trump groups who have already been attacking the billionaire for failing to quell violence at his rallies. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.